is a terrible son.
I guess he doesn't love his mom.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I mean, that's how South Dakota rolls.
Wow. Hello, and welcome to PC Gamer Podcast 222. That's like a magic number. That's pretty cool. Today is Thursday, May 6th, and I'm excited to be hosting this palindrome episode. So a lot happened this week, and we're going to be covering as much as we can. On the schedule today, we've got Steam becomes a lot more civilized, somebody somewhere is breaking the Cataclysm NDA, tisk tisk, and everyone else reaps the benefits. StarCraft 2 release date is announced, and it is invading your Facebook! And maybe we'll talk about some other stuff if we have time. So, and this week, we interviewed Jonathan Bellis, product manager for Battle of the Immortals, an upcoming action RPG MMO coming out of Perfect World that just went into open beta this week. So hang out to the end of the podcast, give that a good listen, and if it's something you're interested, there's info on how you can jump into the beta at the end there. So I'm your host, PC Gamer Associate Editor Josh Augustine, and with me I have PC Gamer Reviews Editor Dan Stapleton.
Howdy.
Former PC Gamer Editor-in-Chief turned Hollywood Master Scribe Gary Witta.
Hello.
Intern Eric Belsas.
Race car. That is also a palindrome.
That is a fact. Well done.
What? It's like the only one I could think of.
I didn't know race car was a palindrome. That's just cool.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Maybe even the best. All right, and to see Andy, can you top his palindrome? Our podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Hi. That's a word that people say.
It is. That would pass in Scrabble. You are approved.
All right.
All right. So, let's jump straight into fantastic news. So first, let me start off this news section by saying that we don't encourage anyone to break non-disclosure agreements. We totally respect embargoes and NDAs. But that being said, none of us are in the Cataclysm Alpha, and none of us have signed any non-disclosure agreement regarding it. And so the news is out there on the internet, so we're not going to pretend that it doesn't exist. We're just going to cover what's already out there. So there's going to be massive spoilers for the next few minutes, so if you don't want to hear anything about Cataclysm, you'd best just skip ahead a few minutes till we're talking about other stuff. All right, so now let's get into it. The information's been out on kind of sub-forums for a little while. Family and Friends Alpha launched for Cataclysm last week, and so people are kind of sharing the client around, and so people are using like private servers to get into this client and search and find out all this sort of information. They were not joking about tearing the entire world apart with this expansion. I mean, almost everything looks like it's completely remade from scratch. It's incredible. I mean, who all has been following this?
I've been keeping live streams and updating all sorts of sites for 2 days now, so yeah, I'm all over it.
I have a question about this right off the bat, and it might be a bit of a rookie question, but I haven't been following it that much. But typically, when they do these expansions, you know, they add a new section of the world, which you know you need to go buy the expansion to go visit. In this case, though, where they're radically changing areas of the existing world, how's that going to work for people that don't have the expansion?
Yeah, the way it's going to work pretty similar, where they are still adding new zones, like for level 80 to 85, and those are going to be only if you've bought the expansion. But everything that is like the old world, like Orgrimmar and the Barrens, everything that they're changing is changing for everybody. There won't be an old version and a new version. Yeah.
Even if you like the old version, you're gonna have to face the changes.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, you're going to have to learn to love the new version.
I have a follow-up question to that.
Yeah.
Do you know, and it's probably not easy to discern from like these screenshots or whatever you're looking at, but have they done an upgrade graphically to like support new hardware stuff?
Yeah, they kind of do graphics tweaks with everyone. It's not like a total graphics overhaul, like moving to a new engine or anything.
Yeah.
But they've done a lot to the water. Looks amazing, because they are going to have like underwater zones and a lot more focus on underwater gameplay. So they totally redesigned water, and they've totally redesigned the skybox, which has like the clouds and the atmosphere. Those are the biggest things I've noticed.
Always been a big step up. I remember when they brought in Burning Crusade, and you went into the Outlands for the first time, and you look up at the sky, and wow, this is like better than any sky that's been in the game before. I like that they always do that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I remember, I mean, when they first brought in like dynamic shadows, like it seems like a small thing, but it's just the little touches just make all the difference. It just makes such a big change in the overall world that you don't really, I don't know, you don't even really think about it. But yeah, so.
Well, I guess one thing I have a question about on this is why do you think they're devoting so much effort to rebuilding like the old parts of the game where like people high, that are, you know, really into the game, the higher level people aren't going to spend much time there, are they? Or are they going to give you reasons to go back to that area at a higher level?
There won't really be a lot of reasons to go back as a higher level, but there are a lot of reasons to roll a new character. Mm-hmm. And so with kind of goblin and worgen races coming out, no new classes and a lot of new class combinations, like you can be a troll druid or you can be a tauren paladin, they really want everybody to create a new alt and start from level one and roll up and just to experience the whole world again. I think business-wise, the reason they're doing it is because they realize that kind of the original 58 levels really paled in comparison. It was designed back when, you know, Blizzard, I'm sure, had a fine budget and had all the time in the world, but didn't have the budget that they have now with 12 million people that they can just pour money into making it the absolute best.
I think it's probably not just a matter of the resources, but they now have so much more knowledge of how to maximize what their engine can do. Yeah. And frequently you see in a game, you can tell what the first part of a game that was made was. In Dragon Age, like you look at the Kokori Wilds, and they're obviously made long before the rest of the game because they just didn't know all the stuff they could do in the engine yet. So by the time they get to the end of developing a game, they know they're much better at it. So they can then, you know, go back and redo earlier stuff and it'll look much better.
Yeah, totally. The thing that they always love to say is that they are their own biggest critics. And so they always looked back at what they did and realized that they could do it so much better now and they'd wanted to. And I mean, if they want to keep getting new subscribers, they could either say, you know, okay, just skip the first 50 levels, or, you know, maybe make the first 50 levels so fast it's kind of trivial because it's not great content, or go back and make the content actually enjoyable, which is what they decided to do. And I think a lot of old players will level a goblin, level a worgen, kind of go through just to see the changes, because, I mean, the changes are very, very dramatic.
Yeah, I think it's a very smart move in terms of helping with the replayability of the game. This is one of the reasons why I have never really got into the whole making alts thing. I mean, I did it with the Death Knight because you could start at level 55, but I've had a few attempts over the years to kind of restart a character at level 1. I created a Draenei, and I created a goblin, a gnome, and I, you know, tried to level those characters up, and somewhere between like level 10 and 20, I just get bored because I've seen these zones and I've done these quests so many times before. So this is, I think, a very smart way of Blizzard, on Blizzard's part, to get players to go back and do it all over again, but have it still seem new to them.
Yeah, it really is. And for those that don't like alts, just on principle, for whatever reason, I mean, there is still a ton of content for 80 to 85. I would say this is in addition to typical expansion content, instead of like just replacing, instead of new content, they've just redone old stuff.
Now, given that this is the first time that they're just doing 5 levels instead of 10, does that mean that in terms of new leveling, I'm only getting half as much, or does it kind of stretch out to still be the same amount of new questing and stuff?
You know, it remains to be seen. They insist that it's about the same, and that they're making the levels last longer. And so it's actually the same amount of content, you just aren't leveling as frequently, which seems like an odd move to me, because you want players to level frequently because it's like a sense of reward and an easy goal, kind of carrot over their head to keep them moving. But yeah, they say it's the same amount of content, so until I see it, you know, I'll take them at their word for that.
I'm a little wary about that as well, because even leveling to 80, those last few levels to 80 are so agonizing, because God, you need so much experience. You know, obviously each new level requires more experience than the last. And if they've stretched it out even more, man, you only get to ding 5 times on this new expansion. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, and they've kind of hinted that they're trying to do something where it sounded like they're going to set up some sort of mechanic where you're gaining maybe even new abilities in between levels or something like that. Because they said we'll be expanding the levels, but more stuff will be happening between the levels. And so I just don't really know. They haven't said a bunch.
So what are some of the highlights of the leak that's sprung out like a Gulf Coast oil well?
Well, the highlights for me has definitely been these streaming videos. There's two people that are doing streaming videos, and they're with chat, and they're talking with people on there, and they'll ask, like, hey, what do you want to see? And wow. Then people will be like, hey, I want to see the talent panes, or hey, what does Deathwing look like? And they're on a private server where they can spawn up the Deathwing model and just kind of show Deathwing off. Or so the two biggest... Oh, yeah.
I think you get in trouble for this?
Is this another iPhone left in a beer keller? I mean, what happened here?
Who's buying this, for coverage?
Yeah, it's basically somebody who signed the NDA in the Family and Friends Alpha, so it's someone fairly close to Blizzard, leaked out the torrent file to download the client, and so the client got in the hands of basically anybody in the community that wanted it, and then people who know how to run private servers, I have no idea how you do this, to be honest. You need some sort of special server architecture or something, are running a Cataclysm server on their personal computer and are in the games as GMs. And so the people, I'm not entirely sure how the legal works, but the people that are running this haven't signed any NDA. So I don't know. So I'm guessing whoever leaked it is the one that would be originally responsible. I guess it is similar to the iPhone leak. I mean, it's tough to pin exactly who's breaking the legal.
And as great as it is for fans to get an early look, I'm sure Blizzard aren't happy about it. And I don't think it's very cool. And while I doubt that they will, I'd like to believe that they would find the person that leaked that out, because that's just not cool.
Right.
I mean,
these guys might not be breaking an NDA, but they have pirated software.
Yeah, that's not how friends and family behave.
Well, it's that one uncle. You know, you don't talk about him.
Yeah, the black sheep of the family.
That being said, this is MMO Champion, who is famous for leaking stuff early. They always leak early. They have a lot of connections inside of Blizzard, and they haven't been sued as far as I know. So they seem to operate with kind of a silent consent, because they're always leaking stuff that Blizzard doesn't want to be leaked, and they never seem to get in any legal trouble for it.
Yeah, well, Apple maybe set a new precedent, huh?
Well, Apple sues people all the time.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not really sure what sort of connection MMO Champion has to Blizzard, but they seem to always get away with this sort of thing. Whether, you know, it's right or wrong, you know, the information is out there and fans are watching it. So, I mean, people are getting a lot of sneak peeks of kind of the new Goblin starting zones, the Worgen starting zones. The new Orgrimmar and Stormwind look absolutely gorgeous. Orgrimmar looks way better than Stormwind, so Horde wins again. Big surprise.
How have they changed?
Eric, well, the lore behind it is kind of Garrosh comes in and takes over, and he kicks everybody but the Torn out, because he doesn't think they're strong enough to defend the city. And they take all of the Black Iron from Northrend, and all of kind of Garrosh Hellscream's architecture out there, and he basically remakes Orgrimmar in that image. And he makes it like a military camp, where the center of the town is a giant tower where Hellscream sits with all of his army, and then everyone else is kind of in little separate ghettos around. Like, trolls have their little ghetto that they need to stay in. Goblins have their little ghetto, which, you know...
So this isn't just like a new graphic coat of paint. Like, they totally remodeled the entire map. Oh.
Yeah, that's... just watching these people play and looking at the maps, like, it's not just fixing a texture, maybe replacing NPCs. They basically tore it out and redesigned the entire architecture, the entire layout, the entire landscape. Everything is completely brand new. It's kind of funny because every now and then you spot a building and be like, oh, that building looks exactly the same. And it's like, oh, well, they didn't bother to fix that. I mean, they fixed everything else around it. I don't know. I kind of find myself, I don't know, being very critical of the things that they didn't change, which is funny because, I don't know, maybe because they changed 90%. That 10% sticks out like a sore thumb that they didn't touch.
Well, they are still in alpha, to be fair. Things are still changing. So I would say that maybe they just haven't gotten around to it yet. It is odd when you see like the old style architecture just surrounded by all this new cool black iron. Yeah.
How is Stormwind different?
Well, the first thing is they're making all the cities accessible via flying. And so they've opened it up a lot more. Part of the park, which I think is the northwestern part of Stormwind, the Cataclysm basically threw that into the ocean. And so the city kind of breaks down and starts collapsing into the sea on one quarter. The separate sections are broken up a bit more with a lot more open space where players will be able to fly into. Yeah, that seemed like it. The architecture was refined a bit more, where there's a lot more polygons on each of the buildings. But other than that, Stormwind didn't change nearly as much. The basic structure and format of Orgrimmar is the same, or of Stormwind is the same as it is now.
This all sounds like very very hardcore, and presumably Blizzard have found a way to do this in such a way that the game is still accessible for players, because I imagine there's still a few people left on the planet who have never played Warcraft before and might still, you know, come in and play for the first time. That, you know, they're not coming in and it's all like hellfire and the undead attacking immediately like in their starting zones. Like, there's still going to be presumably some nice pastoral starting zones before all this crazy stuff starts to leach into the world for them.
Oh yeah, there definitely is. Like, with all the cataclysm, all the trouble it caused, it did bring water to a lot of places that didn't have water before, like Thousand Needles, where now Thousand Needles is like islands, and Desolus is now this wonderful, serene jungle. And so, I mean, there's plenty of still kind of relaxing, calm places like that. It seems like most of the coastal areas are the ones that got hit by the cataclysm the most.
So this is like the 2012 of Warcraft.
Exactly. They didn't listen. So yeah, I am just incredibly excited about Cataclysm after seeing this stuff. I normally hate looking at spoilers. I just want to experience it on the live realm and just see it for the first time as I'm playing through it. But you know, I was just so excited about it, I couldn't help myself. I had to watch all this stuff. I had to watch all the videos. And I am very excited about this, Eric. I don't know, does this make you more excited about it?
Definitely. As kind of a, maybe not even so much of a lore junkie as you are, but I love the world of Azeroth. Just this massive, place to explore and experience. And the fact that they're changing everything, that there's going to be new areas to explore and see how old areas have changed and why they've changed. So not even from like a gameplay perspective, it's really exciting. But from a gameplay perspective, leveling, me and Josh and a couple of our friends are planning on leveling goblins together. And like the fact that the, like, especially Desolus, no one really likes Desolus. It's like the most boring zone in World of Warcraft. And they're changing it into this cool tropical paradise. And as Shara is getting some sort of golf course, I mean, it's just, it's sort of Blizzard going all out and saying, like, here's how awesome Azeroth can be. And I am just, after seeing all those screens, the Worgen starting zone looks incredible. I'm really pumped.
This definitely sounds like the best expansion, or certainly the biggest expansion they've done.
Probably, because...
Without a question.
Yeah.
It is gargantuan, and I have to say, I was going to roll a goblin anyways. I am more solidified than ever that goblins are the best race in any game ever. It is incredible. They have this wonderful appeal of like super tacky, like Florida tourists. It's just, it's a really weird aesthetic where they are building golf courses and they're just making stuff out of pipes and flags and sticking it in. And then they have a lake filled with oil spills, and they just set up beach chairs and lounge outside of it. And it's
as an NPC race, they've always been kind of a comedy race in the game. I wonder if that's going to change now that they have to kind of deepen the mythology and let players play them. If people are going to have to kind of take goblins a little bit more seriously now.
I don't think so. Your very first quest when you start out as a goblin is you're cruising around in your car collecting supplies for a pool party.
Wow. Right?
Yeah, they seem to be going very tongue-in-cheek with the whole thing, which I
kind of like that, though, because, you know, it's that's what I like about the Warcraft mythology, is that it goes from the sublime to the ridiculous. You know, like the Death Knight hero quests that you went on when you first rolled a Death Knight were brilliant, and, you know, it was all to do with the Lich King lore and all the really serious kind of dark stuff that Warcraft does really well. But I think it's fun that now you'll get to do something at the very other end of that scale and just really have some silly fun.
Yeah, it should be great. So, as one of the
non-WoW players here, I'm about to pass out. So is there any-
I know. Let's move on. Yeah, I apologize, Dan, for keeping you bored. But let's jump straight into something still Blizzard related, StarCraft II, that you will be much more interested in. So the release date got announced this week, July 27th. Is that right?
That is right.
And you know, they also announced it's going to have possible integration with Facebook. Now, it sounds like you aren't a big fan of this. Why don't you tell us what you think?
Well, I mean, I am kind of a fan of it. Personally, with my Facebook account, I like to keep it sort of clean. I don't want, you know, constant updates. I've you know, blocked everything Farmville related and pretty much every game update I see, just because I I don't really care when somebody levels up and
I do the same. Oh, you found a green egg. I couldn't give a shit.
Yeah, I'll show you where you can shove it. So Blizzard has announced that the Battle.net, the new and improved Battle.net, will feature Facebook integration. And like the first feature they're talking about that you'll be able to use is to basically be able to link your two accounts so that you can see who on your Facebook friends list also has a Battle.net account, and easily add them to your Battle.net friends list, which, you know, that actually sounds kind of useful. I can get behind that, but
that's a good, just as a friend finding tool,
right? If it's just as a friend finding tool, I'm fine with that. But if it's, you know, telling me what achievements people have unlocked and all that kind of stuff, yeah, I can do without that.
But as you said, you can, it's very easy to opt out of that.
Right. True. But, there has been a lot of stuff in the news, you know, over the past year or so about Facebook's privacy, agreements. And basically the way I understand it is whenever you give an application access to your Facebook account, it gives them access to all of your information. And thus it becomes harvestable by not just Blizzard, but Activision. Activision doesn't have necessarily the best reputation of, you know, how they view their customers.
Come on, so Activision has your best interests at heart, Dan. They only want to collect information to improve your experience as a player. You know that. There are a bunch of very benevolent, lovely people over there.
Right. And it's not that I have a whole bunch of like really sensitive information on Facebook. I don't. You know, it's because of concerns like this that I don't. So I know it's not like a boogeyman out to get you kind of thing. It just, you know, kind of makes me stop and think, is that really a good thing? I don't know.
It would be cool if, I don't know if they're planning on this level of integration, but it would seem like it would be cool if, you know, let's say that I saw that you were on Facebook, because everyone's on Facebook these days, and you know, you can see when someone's like actually like live on the page at any given time. If I could just say to you, for example, Dan, hey, you want to play StarCraft? And go, sure. And then there's just a button there that would just launch us straight into the game together from
the webpage or something. Basically, treat it like Steam, mm-hmm. like Steam's buddy list. That would be cool functionality. I don't know how, you know, if Facebook's API allows people to do that, you know, that level of integration, but it'd be cool.
So, is there kind of, what would it have to do to convince you connected with Facebook? Is there something, or do you just kind of not want to do it just because of the privacy concerns? There's nothing they could do.
I mean, like I said, I don't put anything super sensitive on Facebook, or, you know, I don't have like a whole lot of stuff on there. So I probably will end up doing it for the benefits, like being able to see which of my friends are on there. So they wouldn't have to do much. I would hope that they have a good privacy policy.
Do you think they're going to integrate it with kind of Twitter as well? Because I know a lot of people were saying like Facebook is people you went to school with and Twitter like actually your real friends that you would want to play games with.
Well, I mean, it kind of depends. Twitter, as I understand it, the Twitter audience is just, or the user base is significantly, you know, just not that big of an audience, that big a group of people. So it all things considered, it's probably not, you know, at the top of Blizzard's priorities. I'd say most people who are on Twitter are also on Facebook. Not most, but not all. So it would be a lot of overlap. I don't know. Yep. That doesn't seem like it'd be as useful.
All right. We'll see when more details come out. I think it's something that could be interesting. If nothing else, it's kind of a neat option.
Now, is Blizzard still doing the thing where they're splitting the game up into three parts, and this is just like the Terran part?
Well, for the single-player campaign, yes.
Right,
The first single-player campaign is called Wings of Liberty. That's coming out on July 27th. That will have roughly 30 missions, most of which are Terran. There are a handful of Protoss missions in there as well. But yeah, and then the next one will be the Protoss one, and the third one is the Zerg.
But there's a multiplayer component in there as well, right? And you can play all three races in multiplayer.
Yes.
Okay.
And the expansions, or if they're going to be standalone, we don't know exactly what form those are going to take yet. But they may add to the multiplayer, you know, a couple of extra units, but we'll have to wait and see
Is Blizzard getting on board with any digital delivery options yet, or are you going to have to store to buy this?
No, you can buy it through Battle.net. A follow-up question to this conversation I would have is there any other, is there any other game you would like to see integrate with Facebook?
The other Blizzard game, World of Warcraft. I mean, it's an incredibly social experience already. It seems like there is a World of Warcraft Facebook app, but really it's just kind of a spam your friends' feeds with your achievements. So it's not really of much use.
What would you like to see it do?
I would love to see it, like list their characters, what realms they're in, what level they are.
Well, it does that right now.
But I would also like to see, like, kind of like your friends list in game, where like where they are, like if they're in a battleground or if they're cruising around in Dalaran. Because I think if you saw like a few of your friends were in Arathi Basin or something, and you were like, oh, they're all battlegrounding, let me hop in. I think that's kind of the plan for like the new battle.net experience anyway. So maybe that would kind of be.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that there isn't, or maybe there, I mean, I haven't played for a while, so I'm a little bit behind the times, but I would like to see if there isn't already some kind of app or a tool that runs out of the game, like on my desktop or in Facebook or something that lets me know, like, you know, what my friends list or what my guildmates are doing at any given time. So without having to launch the game, I could just see, oh, I got a lot of guildmates on right now. Maybe, you know, I can go, oh, you know, like you said, they're all in battlegrounds. Like, this is a good time for me to jump into the game. So I've just kind of got like a latent, you know, eye into the world without having to boot the game up to see what's going on.
Again, like the Steam friends list.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and from their previews, I don't know, a few months back, their new battle.net experience, it's going to be like an actual desktop client, I think.
Right.
So maybe that's
exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah, maybe that's exactly what's coming. Or I could be, you know, grinding in Warcraft and see a bunch of my friends in StarCraft and be like, oh, I'll hop on and play some.
Are they planning a standalone desktop client for battle.net? Because what's in the StarCraft beta is tightly integrated into StarCraft.
I think that's the eventual plan. I'd have to look it up, so no one quote me on that. But
yeah, I haven't seen anything on that yet. But if they did, I mean, it would certainly put them a leg up on like what Games for Windows has, which shockingly still does not have a desktop client where you can just see
your friends online. I still think that's an absolute disgrace. But it seems like for Blizzard, it would be very easy for them to come up with some kind of Steam-esque Battle.net client, which, let's face it, only ever really needs to have three tabs. Right, you got one tab for each of your games, whether it's Diablo 3, StarCraft 2, or World of Warcraft. You can click on that tab and see what's going on in that game. People who are inside the game could ping you through the app saying, hey, get in here, we need an extra player for, you know, Battlegrounds or whatever. I mean, you can do that now through any, you know, through any other number of, you know, IM or whatever, but it'd be nice to have something integrated within the game. So let's say we're going to do a battleground and we want Dan to come join us or whoever.
That chance.
Yeah, exactly. But rather than having to like quit out and, you know, IM you or whatever, there's just something in the game that integrates with the external Battle.net client, or I could like do /BN or whatever and then type in a message to you and it shows up on your desktop even though you're not in the game.
Now, the one thing that I hope they do, if they do that, is make it maybe use like a Jabber protocol kind of thing, because I'm just annoyed by all the ridiculous number of friends lists I have to have open, you know, to see everybody in different places. Like, I use a multi-protocol chat client. I use Digsby, just so that I don't have to have a bunch of things open. And it annoys me that I can't, you know, add my Steam friends list to that. And I can't add Skype either.
No, it would just run in the background and you would get like a little modal dialogue, like getting a text message or something. It would just like a pop-up.
Right. But I mean, if they made it an open protocol, if they used Jabber or something like that, then I could load that into my multi-protocol chat client, and I would see all of my buddies from Battle.net in there. And, you know, it could change their status messages or whatever.
Right.
I just don't want to have another application I have to run on my desktop at all times.
Does it bother you that you have to do that with Steam? Because Steam is, you know, kind of a walled garden.
It does a bit, yeah. I would much rather if they would make that open as well. In Steam's case, it does launch a lot of my games, so I do keep that open anyway.
Are there any IM clients out there? You know how like you can integrate like a bunch of different people from different systems into one friends list? Like, you know, IM will let you add your Facebook friends now and see Facebook right. chat people. Is there any way to do that with Steam and have your Steam friends show up in one list?
No, with unfortunately, else? Steam does not allow you to do that yet.
Okay.
Time will tell.
go ahead and move on to non-Blizzard news. The Engineer teaser video came out for the engineering update for Team Fortress 2. We all had a good look, and there's a good breakdown analysis on our blog. So what do you guys think is going to happen? What did you spot in the video that had some hints for you?
I personally didn't spot anything, but I know I was on a message board where some people who, you know, take this business very, very seriously had gone through the video frame by frame, like Blade Runner or something, you know, zooming in on
things. Zoom and enhance.
Yeah. Yeah. Track in, pan right, you know, enhance this, and had found some things in the background that they thought led to some clues. I guess it looked like there was a schematic of some kind of robotic arm in the background.
Yeah.
And what looked like a kind of a robot or an armored helmet that looked like it might fit a heavy. And so I think there was possibly the talk that you might even be able to build some kind of mobile turret, like a golem or something that would go around shooting people. Who knows?
Yeah, that's one of the hints in there is that there will be some kind of robot. I mean, based on the helmet / head and arm and possibly a leg in there, something that walks around and is a robot.
But this is the first class specific engineer update, right?
Yes.
I mean, they've gotten little updates just as part of kind of general things, but this is the first one that's all about them.
Yeah, it's long overdue.
They're the last.
Who still hasn't had a class update?
It's just the engineer, isn't it?
Just the engineer.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Right. Everyone else. Well. So. I want everyone to make one prediction of what they think that something the engineer will get in this update. And it can be, I'm going to go first because mine's kind of crazy. I saw the arm and immediately what I thought was like their supply station, you would be able to upgrade it. So it would have an arm that would remove one sapper every X seconds, maybe like every 10 seconds or something. But you lose the functionality that it heals teammates. And so it becomes a much more kind of defensive, protecting himself, the engineer kind of taking care of himself instead of helping his teammates.
What about like a mobile supply station? Like it sprouts arms and legs and kind of follows you around like a little R2-D2 or something.
That was actually what I was going to suggest. Damn you, Witta.
Well, I don't know. I don't even know if it's a good idea. This is what happens, you know, when you try to predict this stuff and you find yourself playing, you know, armchair game designer, and you realize, wow, it's not an easy thing to do. Like, you know, even coming up with what seems like a good idea is one thing, but then figuring out how to actually implement that in a way that's balanced, doesn't break the game one way or another, it's hard for me to imagine what they would do with the engineer.
Oh yeah, and Valve in particular just goes through so many iterations. It's amazing. And all the ideas that seem great that they've you know, set aside, and they had If you look at the blog post on pcgamer.co.uk that looks at all these clues, they go into some of the background on a repair node, which is also referenced in the video, something they tried out that would repair buildings around it, you know, turrets and dispensers around it, and Valve played with that and discarded it because they didn't like the way it was working out and changing gameplay. So they've got so many different iterations, and they just put everything through extensive testing before they roll it out.
All right, Dan, I've heard a lot of talking, but not a new prediction from you.
That's because Gary stole mine.
Yeah, I kind of bogarted Dan's prediction.
Yeah, you got to come up with a new one. That's life.
Funny hats. More of them.
That's the easy way out, but I'll take it. It was good. Yeah. Eric.
Dan sort of talked about mine, and I guess the blog post must have too. I was thinking like that arm attaches to your supply station and like has a wrench and fixes things around it.
Well, it still may. I mean, like the blog post speculates that you know, perhaps the repair node is still in, but as a costly upgrade for the dispenser at level 4. So it could be they just tweaked it and made it work.
Yeah, I think it would be brilliant to have this like robot arm with a wrench sticking out of your supply station, and it just like fixes things on its own or whacks bad guys that come next to it.
I wonder if you could build a kind of like a, to stay with the R2-D2 idea, create kind of an R2-D2 type bot, but which is just basically a mobile bomb, and I could construct it and then give it a target, a waypoint that I could, you know, pick on the map, or as long as I could visually see it, I could just designate it as a target, and it would just kind of robotically head towards it, and it'd be heavily armored, and you know, I could send it towards your target. You know, sometimes one of the big bottlenecks in attack and defend type games is, you know, once you get a lot of turrets up, it can be very difficult to take them down. So you could send in maybe a little bomb bot that would go in and take out turrets, and it would be heavily armored, and people on the defending side would have to kind of concentrate fire on it to take it out before it hit its target or something like that. I don't know.
It's like a decoy, basically, like a turret.
Well,
decoy.
Yeah, it would be a distraction, and also, you know, like I said, if you don't take, it's going to explode once you take all its health out, or when it reaches its target, and if it's headed towards a you know, where you've got like three of your turrets or something, then you're gonna have to waste time taking that thing out while maybe other players are running around going for, you know, their objective.
Yeah, I like that. What if it was like, even if it didn't attack the turrets, if it just kind of ran around and instantly drew the fire of any turret in range, like its little arms waved around to kind of get attention, and then it could kind of distract the turrets for maybe, you know, 4 or 5 seconds long enough for your team to kind of get around the corner and try and take it out.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because, you know, on a couple of the, I mean, you know, obviously they're not unbalanced. I mean, there is a way through, but it can be very frustrating sometimes when on a couple of those attack and defend maps where people have got, you know, a real chokehold on a capture point with their turrets, that, you know, you either have to switch half your team to medics to get through, or, you know, maybe this would be another way to attack a heavily defended turret point.
I really like that change, because it also brings the engineer to kind of the front lines on the offense as well, rather than being a strict defense.
Yeah, it gives them an offensive role rather than a defensive role. That's interesting.
I think the arm is designed to beat Sylvester Stallone at arm wrestling and over the top.
Awesome. Well, we'll see. Do we have any idea when this update is going to be hitting?
No, Valve, you know, doesn't necessarily share.
It's Valve, so yeah.
Maybe they're sick of Team Fortress 2 and they're going to pull like a producer's and introduce grenades again, and it's going to ruin the game like Team Fortress Classic.
I think I do this every time, but I just got to take this opportunity again, since this is the subject, to give Valve their props again for doing this. I can't think of any other free game. I mean, obviously, once you buy it, you know, in terms of free updates that are fairly regularly provided, and which, you know, they're not just, you know, new coats of paint. I mean, they really do evolve the game, and I think it's incredible how much continued support they put into that game to keep it fresh.
Yeah, it's not a free game, but it's cheap. I mean, it's what, $20 when it's not on sale?
No, it's fairly cheap. But what I'm saying, once you've made that initial investment, the evolution of it, whatever they do, you know, I don't think they'll ever charge you for DLC on Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
Not on the PC anyway.
That's excellent.
I've actually got back into Team Fortress 2 a little bit, because I'm in the Friends and Family beta for Steam on Mac. And I'm not allowed to say anything about it because of the terms of the beta thing, but you know, I've been getting back into Team Fortress 2 thanks to Steam coming to Mac, which I think finally goes live later this month, and I'm on the lookout for a new gaming mouse, because, you know, my Apple Magic Mouse, while very nice for word processing and the like, is not, I can tell you now, not a gaming mouse. So I got to go out and get a new mouse again.
Well, maybe we can help you out with that.
But the great thing about it is, you know, it's not Mac specific. You know, the Team Fortress I've been playing, I'm in there, the same servers, the same people playing PC, you know, Mac and PC owners all, you know, in the same servers together trying to kill each other. It's great.
Yeah, we're still going to have to line up our game against Mac Life.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
I can't see that going well for Mac Life. No,
neither do they, but they're determined. Just to get it going. But speaking of Team Fortress, though, I'd just like to say that on our guessing game last week, how much would the 12-inch heavy statue cost? I was the closest. I guessed 250, and it ended up being, what, 230?
Yeah. It was well done, Dan. Props to Dan.
Yeah, so now you guys have to buy me one. I think that's the way.
Oh, man. If we all pool together, we might be able to afford it.
The Price is Right theme is playing in my head now.
I wonder when we're gonna get Meet the Pyro. That's kind of the last big frontier for Team Fortress 2, I think.
Yeah,
that'd be such a brilliant video.
All right, so breaking news. I just had this handed to me. Regrettably, I'll read this as I read it. Regrettably, Logan wasn't able to join us today as he is finishing up his zero-G training. But he did ask me to say hi to the listeners of the PC Gamer podcast and to offer you this token of his appreciation for your patronage. Look him up on Twitter. Oh, is this just a shameless plug?
This the whole thing. Getting more followers.
Yeah. I won't even say his name. And poke around his tweets. Oh, wait. This is... Oh, okay. Yeah, if you're interested in a live squirrel nest cam that he is pimping, you already know his account name. So look on there, May 6th, and you'll find the live squirrel. Oh, he's coming over.
I give him one little task, and he just can't do it. It's really simple. All you have to do is just go to a rock legend on Twitter. I'm sure we can all do that. One little task, and you couldn't do it. And you'll find a link to a live squirrel nest cam. And if you're lucky, you'll see the two little guys snapping together and sneezing and twitching in their little nest. It's just the what? There's Dan over there, and he's looking all like free speech. You know what? If you don't like it, go back to Russia.
Free speech does not prevent you from being judged for what you say.
Besides that, Splinter Cell Conviction is badass, but that's a story for another podcast. Bye. Bye-bye.
Yes, we are truly... all of our lives are enriched by that. Thank you, Logan.
As a quick aside, I didn't realize, Josh, that you're on the wireless WoW headset.
Yes, I am.
It sounds really good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Another stunning endorsement from Dan Stapleton.
No, I actually want one now because I was just like tangled up in my cord on my headset.
Wait, before we all switch to the wireless headset, it doesn't sound as good as you, Dan, or you, Eric. So let's make the switch.
Fair enough.
Wait. All right. First, I just need to know, are we judging the quality of my voice or the technical products we are using?
No, it does not have a good as a response on the microphone. It is definitely...
Yeah, the microphone's just not as high response, yeah.
You guys are just jealous I can spin around in my chair like this.
Okay, now it's sounding a little bit worse, but I think that's because you moved the mic away.
I have a question about that WoW headset. How does it discriminate between the in-game sound and music and the voice chat? Like, is it when you're in the middle of a raid and there's all kinds of stuff exploding and bursting and people are talking as well, is it easy to hear everything clearly?
I have to adjust the volume a little, but then it seems to do okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, generally whenever I'm doing VoIP over a game, I have to turn the game volume way down to 25% and then, you know, max out the headset volume. And then it generally works and I can hear all the, you know, voice chatter and clearly enough to hear. And I still get like the background noise of the game.
Is there any reason to go this way though, other than, you know, just being respectful of others, like if you're playing late at night and you don't want to wake people up or anything? Because I mean, I it seems to me the best way would still be having the real sound going through like actual kind of external speakers, and you would have the voice in your ear via, you know, whatever, you know, earpiece or whatever you've got.
I do that sometimes. The only problem is then your mic is picking up the sound of the game coming through your speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And for the other people listening to you talk, that can be distracting.
I've never had that problem though, because you can get the pretty good microphone should only pick up sound really close to it and not stuff that's further away.
Yeah, it does depend on your mic, and it depends on how loud you've got the volume of the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're already at 51 minutes, so unfortunately, we won't be able to discuss how Alpha Protocol solved the complex DRM issue.
Well, I do want to say something on that really quick. I slipped that topic into the discussion pile.
I want to know, yeah.
So it's just a quick rundown is that it does have, you know, one-time activation, just like, you know, a lot of other games have had. But what is really key about it is that Sega has promised that within 18 to 24 months after release, they will release a patch that disables that. So, I mean, for me, that's all I ask for any game with any activation is if you promise that, you know, it's just promise me that this patch exists, you know, today. It's you know, in somebody's file cabinet somewhere. And in the event that your company goes out of business and you can't, you know, your activation servers go down, I can download this patch and keep playing the game. I mean, that's the only real concern I have about activation, you know, one-time activation. Kudos to Sega for doing that.
Well, there you go. D- DRM solved. So no more letters about it, you guys. It's already been solved. If we had a cool jingle about sales, we would put it here. But there are two great sales this week. Civilization went on sale for Steam. Civilization 4, my apologies. Yeah, not the original. Now it's the complete pack for $10 or the main game for $5. Dan, I have no idea what that means. I've never actually played Civ 4.
Okay, the complete pack includes Civilization 4, the Beyond the Swords expansion, and the Warlords expansion, plus Civilization 4 Colonization, which is the remake of Sid Meier's Colonization, which is a standalone game in of itself. It's just a fantastic deal because those games, if you don't own them, own pretty much any of those already. I mean, like Civilization or Colonization on its own was $10. I guess it's like $7.50 now, but that's just a ridiculously good deal if you don't own those.
So you would recommend the $10 pack over the $5 for anybody?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, in terms of the number of hours you can spend happily playing that game, number of late nights you'll get sucked into, whether one more turn. I just gotta build my first nuke. That's an incredible value.
And then the humble indie bundle. Can you just give a brief overview of what that is?
That's another one of the deals. I believe World of Goo did something like this earlier, where it's pay whatever you want for this game. So you go to the website. Do you have the website in front of you, Josh? It's Wolfire, WOLFIRE.com/humble. So you go there and you can pay, you can offer any price you want. So like $1 or $20 if you want to be generous, or even more if you want to be generous. And for that you get, let me make sure I get this right.
You can also donate it or something, right?
The basics are.
Okay, there we go.
You pay what you want to who you want for these five games. So you can either pay however much you want, from $1 to however many dollars.
Say you give them $10.
Okay. You give them $10, and then you have the options. You can give that $10 to the developers of the games. You can give that $10 to a charity, or you can split it 50-50, developers and a charity.
And these games are World of Goo, Aquaria, Gish, Lugaroo. I'm not even familiar with that one, are you?
No.
And Penumbra Overture. So you get all five games for your contribution, and we get to decide where it goes. That's pretty hard to argue with that deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great, I highly recommend Aquaria. Aquaria is kind of my relaxing game. The music is so soothing. When I just need to relax, I just play that game, and you just kind of swim around, you're having a good time, swim with the fishies. On behalf of Cheapskates Everywhere, can you just download these games if you don't want to donate money, or do you have to donate some amount?
I think you have to give some amount.
Okay.
And it says choose any amount of money, so I mean, zero is not technically a number.
Yeah. Here we go. We have real-time statistics on this page. Total raised so far is $400,000.
Nice.
The average contribution is $7.91, and there's been 50,585 contributions so far.
Not bad.
Interesting. More Linux than Mac donations so far.
Although it looks pretty virtually even based on the graph here.
Does it list the highest amount someone's paid? I'm just curious.
That is a good question.
But maybe one of our listeners will set that record.
Hopefully this is more successful in that Radiohead experiment when they put that album out and said, pay whatever you like, and most people paid nothing.
I gave him $5 for that.
Yeah, I think I did as well. The average payment was something like $2.40 or something. I mean, it's pretty sad.
Right.
Yeah. And well, I think this one's doing a bit better.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cool idea.
World of Goo alone, I mean, that's worth. I think they normally ask $20 for it. It usually goes on sale for $5 or $10. It's worth easily that. Fantastic game.
Yeah, so we encourage everyone to go on there. If you don't already own those games, please go ahead and pick them up and make a donation or give it to the developers, whoever you want to contribute money to. So right now, we're going to go ahead and interview Jonathan Bellis, product manager for Battle of the Immortals, an action RPG coming out from Perfect World Entertainment. So enjoy. With
with Jonathan Velas, product manager on Battle of the Immortals. Hey, John, how you doing today?
Hi, thanks for having me. How you doing?
Doing very good. So do you want to give kind of a brief, like, 1 to 2 sentence overview, just big picture? What is Battle of the Immortals for someone that doesn't know?
So Battle of the Immortals, in a nutshell, it's an action MMORPG. It's kind of in a similar vein as Diablo or Torchlight, except it's in MMORPG format. Additionally, it's the first game from our Shanghai studio. It's actually themed around more Western content rather than Eastern content in mythology. Traditionally, most of the Perfect World Entertainment titles are centered around Chinese mythology, whereas Battle of the Immortals is centered around Norse mythology. It also touches on various other mythologies around the world, like Egyptian. It touches on Atlantis and the history behind that. And basically, players are tasked with raiding various tombs and dungeons around the world in pursuit of these ancient relics of power, which are called soul gear.
Okay, so why did you guys decide to make the shift in towards like sort of Norse mythology? What was it about it that attracted you to that?
Basically, Norse mythology has a lot of interesting things about it. The game is centered around Ragnarok and you know, basically impending doom and Armageddon. But additionally, we just wanted to do something different. You know, we have a lot of games that are heavily rooted in Chinese mythology, and granted, that has been our bread and butter for quite a long time. But we realized that in order to attract a more international market, we need to have something that is not strictly Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be really difficult to kind of bring over a game that's made in the Asian market and try and market it to a North American market. Like, is that... Would you say that it's incredibly complex, almost as complex as building a brand new game from scratch?
I would say it's harder than building a game from scratch because there are some things... Okay, if you're building a game from scratch, you can look at the market you're targeting and build it for that market. Whereas if you're porting a game or bringing a game from overseas, there are aspects or technical mechanics behind that game that you can't alter anymore because they are... for better or worse, always going to be a part of your core mechanic in that game. It is a little bit more difficult. But, I mean, that's part of what makes BOI so special, I think, in addition, is, traditionally a lot of the games that Perfect World Entertainment has been bringing to North America have been ports in one way or another. But BOI is the first game where we've actually been able to not only localize the language and game quite a bit, but also the gameplay. We've been able to customize a lot in terms of the North American and European regions for Battle of the Immortals. And I think that it's definitely a step in the right direction, and we're definitely seeing numbers that that support that.
What are the major differences, kind of big picture differences you've seen between the two audiences that kind of make you make these, or cause you to make these changes? Between the two regions?
Before I answer that question, let me just briefly paint a picture of what Battle of the Immortals is like in China in contrast to what it is here. So in China, Battle of the Immortals is, in a way, it's kind of like a glorified chat room. So basically, it's an MMO where monsters don't aggro you. They do one damage to you, regardless of what class you are. There's an in-game bot mechanic where basically it's an automated system where players can just set the game to play itself. And there's really no challenge to the game whatsoever, right? So in Battle of the Immortals in the US, we've changed a lot of that. We've added monster AI. Monsters will aggro you now. They'll actually do damage to you. Your life will actually be in danger. And we've actually removed the in-game bot mechanic. So why do we do those things? So in China, games that have, and in Korea as well, games that have a heavy grind factor, grinding meaning, you know, you're killing the same monsters over and over aimlessly in order to push stats or level your character up, that's more widely accepted overseas than it is here in the Western market, in the US and Europe. In US and Europe, gamers are a little bit more focused on gameplay. they want to play a game and they want it to be fun. They want to feel the mechanics. You know, they don't want to just sit back and watch their character play itself. They can just watch TV, you know. So, you know, people want something a little bit more interactive from their games. They want something a little bit more in depth. They want to feel a sense of achievement when they beat a boss or level up. And in China or in Asia, a lot of the game is really centered around the theme of like rankings, you know, like who's the top guy on the server, who's been grinding the most, who's been setting their bot 24/7. And it's really just a big hardcore ranking competition. And, you know, in the US and Europe, yeah, sure, having a ranking system is great. And, you know, people always want to be number one. But the people who are in the top 10 of your rankings is such a small percentage of your user base that, you know, everybody else that's not on those rankings are just going to be like, what's the point? You know, if I'm ranked 1,005, what's the point? So centering the game around those themes does not make sense for the Western market at all.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting because you're talking about basically like the core fundamentals about not only like how gameplay works, but like what the game is supposed to be.
Exactly.
Is what you're changing.
We're talking about not just what people like, but culturally, what is the gaming culture like in the US and Europe versus Asia?
So what's kind of the draw? If it is so much work and you have to change so much, why not just create a game from scratch? What's sort of the benefit?
Well, Battle of the Immortals is actually a pretty fun game. About a year ago, you know, we saw the game and we were like, wow, you know, I don't think this is going to work. I don't think that people are going to want to play this in the Western market. And we sat down with the developers in Shanghai and they were like, why? You know, what's wrong? This game is beautiful. People love this game, you know. And despite how many things initially with the Asian version are wrong with BOI, there are a lot of things that they did right, that they did really well. For example, the soul gear and equipment and itemization in the game is exquisite. Some of the sets of armor in this game are more detailed than armor in any other MMO I've seen. You know, I've played WoW from top to bottom. I've played, you know, Warhammer. You know, as a product manager, it's my job to play all the games that are out there under the sun, especially in the MMORPG realm. And the armor in BOI is crazy. There's going to be shields that like open and close. There's shoulders that like raise and lower. There's visors that open and close. There's chains that will float around your character. There's all these visual, basically kind of like spell effects that are associated with the different sets of equipment. You can really see that the Shanghai studio spent a lot of time, in the design process and creation process in terms of the itemization of BOI. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, like, one of my favorite things I've been playing through the closed beta for a while is, I don't even remember the name. It's, like, called the Terror Wheel or something. It's basically
The Terror Wheel mount. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the giant wheel that you just cruise around and roll people over. And, like, they have koalas with saws that was, like, my teammates or whatever. I mean, it looks like a healthy mix of kind of not, like, just mythology or kind of stuff like that. It looks like a healthy mix of kind of creativity, just brand new stuff. Where do you get these wacky ideas of koalas with goggles and saws coming around cutting up your enemies?
You know, so I visited the studio in Shanghai and, you know, so I've seen like concept drawings of some of the things you mentioned, but there is so many more crazier things that aren't even in the game yet, that are just on walls in the office over there. And really the people and the designers that are the creative directors behind this game are extremely imaginative, and I really envy the amount of creativity that they have. They're crazy individuals, but I'm glad to have them on our side at least.
Exactly. So there's still a lot of resistance in the US to the free-to-play business model. How difficult do you find it is to convince someone to just give your game a try?
So I've been working in the free-to-play industry for about 5 years now, maybe almost six. And you're absolutely right. It is, I'll tell you something. Maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, in order for us to get an interview with PC Gamer, it was almost impossible, man. I have to tell you. But back then I will admit I was toting some pretty crappy games at a different company. So it was harder.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this all comes back to the cultural thing, right? In the U.S., and or specifically in the U.S., there's, you know, a saying, and that's there is no free lunch. There's no such thing as a free lunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
People associate the word free with the word scam. And people are so used to having to pay for something of value and of worth that anytime you give somebody something for free, they're almost instantly convinced that it's not worth anything or it's a scam. So, you know, applying that to free-to-play games, it's the same thing. Especially given the fact that 5 years ago, when this market started in the U.S. and in Europe, the games that came out that were brought over from most primarily Korea, they all sucked. They were all really bad. They were all poorly localized. Customer service was horrible. They were all grindy. And as a result, you have a generation of kids that tried free-to-play games over the past several years, and they got burned. And they're like, you know what, free-to-play sucks, and I'm never playing another free-to-play game ever again. And yeah, it's hard because we're trying to change that. You know, we're trying to turn that ship around, and we're trying to convince people that there is value in these games. And you don't have to contribute to the cash shop in order to compete. And there's a lot of value you can get out of this game without paying a subscription fee at all.
Yeah, it's definitely taken time, but I think a lot of games recently have been coming out kind of adopting this free-to-play business model as, you know, a business model rather than, you know, well, we can't convince people to pay for this, which I think was the case with the original free-to-play ports over here. It was like, well, no one's going to pay money for this, so we better just give it to them and hope we can milk money out of them later.
You know, interestingly enough, in Asia and China, if you launch a game and it's subscription-based, people will initially think, wow, I think this game's going to fail. I don't think this game's going to do well. And free-to-play is just so dominant over there, and it's so socially accepted, and it's been there for so long that, you know, that's where the market is there. If you're in subscription, you're doing it wrong, with the exception of WoW, but, you know, WoW is the exception to every rule.
Isn't that the truth? So do you see free-to-play as the future? That kind of subscription is something the Western market will grow past, or is this something that'll stand forever?
There is room for both, but I think that free-to-play is going to get a bigger and bigger piece of the market every year going forward. Like you mentioned before, the quality of the game of free-to-play games is increasing year over year. And on top of that, there's a whole generation of kids right now that are engrossed in games like Club Penguin and Free Realm, things like that. You know, people are engaging in microtransaction-related content, whether it be a free-to-play game or whether it be Xbox Live, PSN, your iPad, your iPhone. You know, people are getting used to microtransactions more and more. And I think that as the quality increases and as culturally the Western market warms up to this business model, it's only a matter of time before, you know, people like Blizzard start turning their heads.
So can you give us, are you allowed to go into details of the cash shop at this point for how that'll work in Battle of the Immortals?
This is actually something additionally that has been drastically modified between the Chinese version and the Western version. So in the Chinese version, there are these gems in the cash shop. They're basically socketable gems that you can put in your gear or equipment, right? In China, these gems, or actually in both versions, these gems are super powerful. Like, basically, you can deck your character out, and the amount of stats and functionality you're going to gain from these gems can be exponential if you have enough of them, right? The problem is, in China, you just buy the gems straight up. And that means that if you have money, you can just buy a bunch of gems. You'll be, you know, three times better than everybody out there, and you'll be able to own anybody to the face as long as you spend money and they didn't. And that's not cool. That's not acceptable in the U.S. market, and that's something we had to change. So actually, those gems you'll see in the cash shop now, they're not there anymore. You can't buy them with cash anymore. So the salary system in BOI is a system where as your character is logged into the game or as you play the game, you accumulate salary. And salary is used to purchase items from the salary shop, which is kind of like a mirror of the cash shop in the game. So if you don't have a lot of money, you probably have a lot of time. So you can play the game a lot and you can accumulate salary and you can purchase these gems, these power gems in the cash shop, or soul gems as we call them. But essentially, we removed the soul gem category from the cash shop the real money shop, and we added them as in-game drops in dungeons, in events. So now all these gems are attained through natural gameplay rather than just purchasing them straight up.
Are they like sellable on like auction house via in-game currency as well?
Yeah, definitely. A majority of the cash shop items in the game, not only can you sell them to other players, which increases the accessibility to the cash shop for non-cash shop users, but additionally, there is an NPC in Atlantis where, let's say you have all the time in the world, but you have no money. You have no real world money. You can go grind your heart away, get a bunch of in-game coin, and you can go to this NPC in Atlantis and you can purchase Zen from other players using coins. And so let's say on the flip side, you have a full-time job, you make a ton of money, but you don't have time to play this game day in and day out. You can actually go buy some Zen, go to this NPC, and then sell your Zen to another player and get some coins, and then basically buy whatever you need using coins. So we're effectively cutting out the gold farmers. We're cutting out the middleman. And players can just sell gold to each other.
The free-to-play market seems fairly split on this issue, because a lot of games still kind of very restrict, you know, items that you buy through the cash shop, you know, only through the cash shop, and you can't give them to other players. Then others seem to take the more kind of liberal approach to you of letting the players kind of manage it themselves. And, you know, the way one creative director described it to me I really liked was, you know, some players are wealthy in time, other players are wealthy in money, you know, and it kind of lets you choose whichever one you want to invest. What's kind of the reasoning behind, you know, making the decision there that you did?
The reasoning behind it is strictly statistical. The number of people who indulge themselves or utilize even your cash shop is a minority in comparison to the people who don't. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a game and you are emphasizing the fact that anybody can hop in and compete regardless of whether or not they spend money, having a bunch of items that can't be tradable through the cash shop kind of disagrees with that concept. So we want the cash shop to be accessible by anybody and everybody. And we have data that shows that, you know, we have, as I mentioned before, we have a secondary market basically now, right, for Zen, where players are selling it to each other. You know, we are very meticulous about data management here and statistical management at PWE, and we keep track of how much Zen, not only how much money, you know, we make, but how much money players make off each other through this system. And we can see how many players are buying items using Zen that they bought themselves, and how many players are buying items using Zen they bought from other players. And I can say with 100% certainty that having this system is a value to our users.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us about this. If anyone listening to this is interested in playing, can you tell them where they can go to sign up? It just went into open beta today, correct? Is that right?
Yeah, most definitely. We went into open beta this week. We had a huge surge of users, a lot more than we anticipated. And if you are interested in playing BOI, the only thing you're going to lose is a little bit of your time, maybe a little bit of your bandwidth. And you can check it out at boi.perfectworld.com or just go to www.perfectworld.com.
That's great. And now that you guys are in open beta, are you going to be resetting characters anymore, or is it pretty permanent from here on out?
All character data is permanent from this point forward. There are no more resets.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, again, this is Jonathan Bellis, Product Manager for Battle of the Immortals. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Dan, what are you playing?
Oh, I finished up with Serious Sam, which... you know, I was getting really frustrated with because I was playing mostly single player, and then like by the time I got, you know, like 2/3 of the way through, I realized you know, maybe this is better in co-op. So I got Eric in there, and we were playing, and it's just so much better in co-op, so much less frustrating, because when you die in co-op, you just instantly respawn. When you die in single player, you get zapped back to wherever you last remembered to hit F6 for autosave. Which is just awful, because a lot of those battles are really hard to do without dying, even on normal difficulty, because there are just so many of these enemies coming at you. So it's much, much better in co-op.
Very cool. Gary, what are you playing?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm back into Team Fortress 2 thanks to Steam for Mac. And like I said, it's still very early because they're in the closed beta phase. And what I can tell you is that it looks really beautiful on a 27-inch Mac screen running at an incredibly high resolution, which I was a little bit worried about. It wouldn't run great because, you know, Macs aren't necessarily the biggest gaming powerhouses, but I got a pretty good one here, and even at the incredibly high res, like something like 2600 by 1400 or whatever it is, the native resolution of the screen, the frame rate is really, really good. You know, as smooth as you'd want it to be, because I think, you know, that's the great thing about Valve's engine. They keep the graphical requirements fairly low. So it looks fantastic, and I'm looking forward to Team Fortress going live with the rest of Steam. And, you know, hopefully bringing Mac and PC gamers together in a way they haven't been before. I think that's going to be pretty cool. And I say this every time I'm on the podcast. It's kind of tragic, really, but especially since we were talking about Cataclysm, I am going to finally jump back in, reactivate my WoW account, and finish the last couple of levels to 80 so that I can finally be ready for Cataclysm whenever that eventually comes out.
Good man. Good man. All right, Eric.
The same old story with me. World of Warcraft. I'm on my road to 80. Just hit so close to 58, which is a pretty magic level in World of Warcraft because it means you get to go to Outland, one of the expansion continents, where leveling is much... Not only it's faster, but it's way more interesting because you're in this whole new crazy world. So I'm really looking forward to that. I've been playing a little StarCraft. I won my first game, and it was against Dan and Evan, so I'm pretty proud of myself. I have to admit I had a secret weapon, and that was Josh standing behind me telling me what to do.
Teamwork.
Yeah. But it's fun. Like, even though I lose quite a bit, I have a lot of fun playing StarCraft, so... Hopefully I'll get some more in this week.
Yeah. Together we brought Dan to his knees.
together with Evan, yes.
Yes.
And I did make a stupid mistake in that game. So
yeah.
I can't blame all my problems on Evan, like I usually do.
That's good. This is a step in the right direction, Dan. We're very proud. Andy Bauman, what have you been playing?
Yeah, I've been playing nothing. I got RL stuff going on. It's crazy, so
that's cool.
You know how that goes. Hey,
I do, all too well. Well, so, luckily, I've been playing enough for both of us, Andy, so that is okay. I got you covered.
No, that's... Oh, I'm jealous.
Besides vicariously playing Cataclysm through this streaming video that I've been staring at the entire podcast, and I'm actually proud of myself being able to pay attention and respond to questions as well I have. But I've been playing lots of StarCraft 2. I'm back playing Protoss, which was what I played in the original game. I tried Terran in StarCraft 2, honestly, because their music is so incredible. It's so fun. It's like a mix between like Southern fiddle and space, like punk. I don't know. It's fantastic. But I'm back on Protoss and doing really well. I'm really enjoying that. Yeah, that's about it. I guess it's time to bring this podcast to a close. Thanks to everyone for joining me, and thanks to everyone who sent in their questions, even though we didn't answer them this week. We look forward to answering them next week.
We gotta do like a question-focused episode next week, because we haven't gotten to them the last couple.
That's true. That's a really good idea. All right, next week, let's plan that.
We answered them questions, in our minds.
So if you're telepathically.
Yes,
if you are telepathic, you will have received your answers. If not, I'm afraid you're not blessed with that superpower. So please send in more questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or call us toll free at 877-404-1337 extension 724. Send in lots of questions. And yeah, next week we'll just do a question centric podcast, a question palooza, if you will. And if you aren't already a subscriber, we encourage you to become one. Just head over to pcgamer.com, fill out our fancy subscription form. We'll happily send you the best PC gaming magazine in existence every month. On behalf of everyone here at PC Gamer, thanks for listening to the podcast.
calling. Oh. My cat just fell and it almost took out my cord.
Wow. Producer down.
Do you guys need to record anything else, you know?
No, I could sing a song if you want to record something.
I don't know. You need to, like, need to do any messages to your mom for Mother's Day? Or, like, what do we need here?
Oh, dude. No, I'm actually going down to see my mom in person on Mother's Day. That's how good of a son I am.
All right. Eric, any MP3s? MP3 recordings you need? He's not there. All right.
No, he's not. He's a terrible son.
I guess he doesn't love his mom.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I mean, that's how South Dakota rolls.
Wow.
He's not here to defend himself. We just get to say whatever we want.
Not actual fact. Josh Augustine has never been to South Carolina. Or South Dakota. Wherever you just said.
One of those places. Yeah. I might have been there when I was a child. And who better to understand the parent-child relationship than an infant?
Amended. Maybe he's been there, but I don't know.